Here.
Here.
Okay, in the essence of time, some of the board members here will not be able to stay through the duration, so we're going to take up the items that are the action items first. So action item number three, you have a report? Pardon? Yes. Yes. No, we're gonna hear from the staff, but right now what we're going to do is we're just going to move on the action items first.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Okay, gotcha. I'm sorry. The secretary has just informed me that action item number three, we cannot hear it today due to a conflict. So let's move forward to item number four. Thank you.
Okay. Item number four is the Metro Green Construction Policy. Yesterday in the EMAC committee, it was decided to not to pursue that policy discussion this month since we had to do more outreach with the TBAC and other interested agencies. So we are pulling that out from this month's agenda.
Okay.
Would the committee like a report on it?
Yes, please.
Can you give a brief report?
We can briefly give the report on that.
A couple of minutes.
This is Dr. Chris Lebon. He's the project manager for it, and he will give a brief report.
I just wanted to mention that we were in the EMAC yesterday, and this policy essentially is an offshoot of the motion by Director Katz back in December, and back in March, we were here presenting this to EMAC, and staff was directed to do additional outreach and a rewrite of the draft policy. For this month, we did put together a final draft of this policy and presented it in the board report that you have in front of you. Some of the items that I would like to highlight is that this policy is applicable to any new projects on MTA property, as well as any projects that are funded by the MTA. It's also affecting on-road and off-road equipment, as well as generators. And then in this policy, we have reached out to various entities, including the regulators, environmental groups, and other members of the public. There are exceptions to this policy that we have put in, and those exceptions are very flexible, in our opinion. But again, we do recognize that we need to do additional outreach on this policy, and that's what we're trying to do. We have scheduled an outreach meeting with Streets and Freeways this morning, and we Streets and Freeways subcommittee is going to make a recommendation to the TAC. We're going to report to the TAC on July 6th and then to TBAC on July 12th. So I would welcome any questions.
Are you going to let us know what the cities have told you about this policy?
The cities are want to essentially say or want to have this policy be reviewed by the COGS. The recommendation to the TAC from this morning's meeting is to for this policy to be adopted by the MTA board for the MTA, and then have a bifurcated implementation for the cities. What that means is that it will be adopted by the MTA. The plan is for MTA to adopt it for itself, and then the cities will have an additional outreach for them to see what additional issues and things we can include into this policy for adoption for the cities. Yes, yes.
You haven't said yet in all of your discussions so far. So this policy, as I understand, mandates that all of the projects in the cities from those funds that they get are mandated to do green construction. Yes or no?
It's not green construction, Director Molina. It's for the use of green equipment in construction activities.
For what?
Green equipment in construction activities.
MTA-funded projects.
Yes. Oh, for MTA-funded projects, I'm sorry. Yeah.
A green policy, yes or no?
I want to understand clearly. So is it mandating that the cities do it? under our policy?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, then before you mandate somebody to do something, you can't say to the board, let's go. I mean, it's been around now for a year, hasn't it? This policy, this proposal?
It was, there was a motion back in December.
In December?
Yes. About a month ago.
Well, but it is mandating the city, so why would we want to... I mean, I agree. I don't see why a city would want to object. And I think that we, as the provider, I don't know if we're the provider of money, it's their money as much as it is our money, but that they should construct green. Now, but if they're objecting and they... Why are you doing it backwards? Because then if you have to amend the policy... Not that I'd know there would be an amendment, but I'm just saying, do you think they would have in the beginning? I mean, it's been around since December. Somebody could have gone to the COGS or they could have gone to the sectors and reviewed this and see if there were objections. It's sort of awkward for us. No? Yes? Maybe?
I'm just reflecting on your points. In retrospect, I think you're right. We probably... could have done more outreach earlier. So our notion here was to talk with the TAC and bring it back for action at the board. Will we have completed all that outreach before the board meeting?
Yes, we would have completed those outreach meetings.
I'm sorry?
So the goal is to have all that outreach dialogue done before the board meeting. If
that board meeting would be this month or sometime in the future?
It will be in July.
Next month in July.
Have the cities chimed in yet?
There were several recommendations in the streets and freeways earlier, and one is having a workshop, for example, with all the cities attending that workshop. The other one is the TAC making... No. Yes. They did not say that, ma'am, and what they wanted to do is for them.
Yeah. I'm not getting a complete answer, and this is a very simple thing. I'm in favor of this policy, but I don't want people to get taught how to do it. I'd like to know from cities that have major transportation projects going on, they're going to carry this out. This has implications for them of dollars. You know that.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So let's be real about it. I want it to happen. But it's the cities that manage these dollars. It isn't the advisory committee, by the way, or anyone else. And so we need them to be a part of this discussion. I can't imagine what they're going to say other than we don't want to do it, which is one thing they might say. Most of the cities, I think, would be willing to do it. But I do think it may have implications on costs that are associated with the projects they've already begun.
Why don't we assemble... a list of the city's comments and maybe categorize them as fully supportive or... When we come back to the board, we will attach a summary of responses that we get for whatever purpose.
Because you could go to the sectors, which represent the cities. You could also go to the COGS, that represent the cities. And I think in 1 month, I'm just worried that if there's a project that's going on and they've been budgeting accordingly and now we're mandating a policy on them, it's not been put into the equation. It's sort of unfair.
Point accepted. Huh? Point accepted. So we will proceed as you just outlined.
Thank you.
Ms. Molina, do you have a motion?
I would like this to be referred back to the office or to the department, and I think they should carry out hopefully within the month, some discussion with the cities and let us know if there are concerns or issues or any amendments that like to be made to the policy. I also would like to know when it's going to go into effect. So if a project has already been started, maybe from the standpoint of at least allocating the dollars, is that when green is mandated or is green mandated before it's even a concept? I need to know a time frame. This doesn't have it.
Those are good questions, and obviously if somebody is well along in the process and ready to go, that's one thing. If it's years out, that's a different thing. So
fair enough.
We have a second?
Second.
Okay, any other discussion? Okay, without objection, so ordered. Thank you, Ms. Molina. Next item.
Item number six is the Metro Transit Project Contingency Policy. Questions were raised about the how Metro is handling the contingency on each of the project. Here we have Director of Project Control, Mr. Bill Brown, presenting the contingency policy.
Good morning. I'd like to give a brief overview of the policy. The project contingency policy addresses that a cost and schedule allowance is required to mitigate risk to a project. The amount of project contingency is dependent on the complexity and uncertainties at each given phase of the project. Project contingency is measurable in both cost and in time. The amount of contingency is determined during the risk assessment process that several of the projects right now have gone through and will continue. The risks are determined by evaluating the project definition and scope, the current cost estimate, and the schedule. For cost contingency, there is an allocated and unallocated contingency component. The allocated contingency is summarized for each cost element within the cost estimate, and there is also an unallocated contingency, which is at the bottom of the cost at the below the line. For schedule contingency, we need to have sufficient schedule contingency available to absorb any of the schedule delays from the start of the final design through the commitments of revenue service. The amount of project contingency is set at the adoption of the LIFR project budget by the Board of Directors, and over the time, project contingency is reviewed during the life cycle of the project. I'm available for any questions from the board.
I have a question. As I was looking through your board report, I had a question, and that question is, in practice, have we actually been going back through the projects that we are underway with to see if we're on track?
Yes, Director Wilson. What we're doing right now is a project, like, for example, we're going back and past projects that we've been successful on and looking at the life of cycle cost and also the schedule to see how we did. Our example right now is on the east side one we just completed 2 years ago. What we're doing now, to answer your question, on the current projects, we're evaluating what the status is and going over what the costs and where we are in the contingency. And at the same time as we're going through the preliminary engineering phase of the three new Measure R projects, we've been doing the risk assessment for both the West Side Regional Connector and just recently completed the Crenshaw LAX Transit Corridor project. And also we've been doing value engineering for both those to determine what the different risk assessments should be for each of the projects, as well as continuing with the industry review coming up here in August for the Crenshaw project. So we do go back and look at what the current projects, how we're doing against those projects, as well as for the new three projects that are in preliminary engineering phase or conceptual engineering.
When did we actually start doing this?
Well, actually, we've had this policy for about 15 years, and we've been going over. It was started back in the North Hollywood days where we completed that project under budget for the subway project, as well as the Orange Line back in 2002 phase when we came up and developed the LIFR project budgets for that. That one also was completed under budget. So we've been doing periodic reviews of the projects as they are completed, as well as making sure that when the new ones start up, we also do the analysis on those.
And the two projects that we have an outside authority, i.e. the Expo and also the Pasadena Foothill Authority, what role do we play in this contingency look back?
Well, I think I need to defer to representatives of the authority.
Yeah, we have Expo and Foothill Authority representatives. They can answer that question. They do it slightly differently than the way we do it.
So we don't do it. When we delegate our authority over to them, they set up their own project contingency system?
Yes, sir.
We negotiate the final price for the project, and they set up their administration accordingly.
Can we have someone from those two authorities?
We do. We have
Mr. Chair.
Do you want to go exposition?
Murthy.
Do you want to go?
Murthy, wait a minute. We've been evolving the last couple of years in our relationship to both construction authorities. In the past, I think we view them as independent and separate. One person even told me that the Expo project is not an MTA project. As you imagine, I disagree with that. We're the banker, we're the owner, and we're the future service provider.
Right.
So we have, in those initial projects, Expo and Goal Line, we had, I believe, an inadequate description of deliverables, of schedule and other things. We remedied that, at least to a large degree, with MOUs with both authorities for their Phase 2 projects. And our goal has been to get to a position where we have a higher level of visibility. In addition to that, our policy on cost control, which provides for cost review and major milestones to ensure that we don't have overruns, which would defund subsequent projects, applies to the construction authorities as well as it does to MTA-managed projects. Now, if you'd like to have, would you like to have the construction authority talk now about, please, let's come on up.
Thank you.
Yes?
What I'm trying to figure out is that the policy that this board has, are your policies with respect to the contingency for each project, does it mirror what we have, or do you have your own set of policies for that?
Well, we've established on Phase 2, we came up with our own risk assessment, which we use to then establish our project contingencies. We then report that back to Metro on a monthly basis.
And on Phase 1?
On Phase 1, the budget was established as part of Metro and then transferred over to the authority. We did have a risk matrix that we monitored our risk against. And as we came up against situations where we had issues with the risk matrix is when we came back to Metro to identify those risks and request additional contingencies.
So in theory and in reality, would you say that on Phase 1 that these risk contingencies actually worked?
To the extent, yes, we've been able to keep the project moving forward. Yes, I do believe that they did.
As I read through the report, it said that we're to look at risk with respect to the requirement, to the design, to the market, to construction. And I thought overall the idea was to make sure that we minimize risk with respect to cost as well. So I'm trying to figure out, you know, what lessons we can learn from what I believe was a cost overrun in Phase 1. What lessons are we going to learn, or did you learn, so that if we're in fact really using this project contingency policy, that we don't make the same mistake that we did in the Phase 1?
Well, in Phase 1, as I've said before, I mean, a big component of the additional cost was additional scope. Again, the addition of two stations, three stations, safety enhancements, those sorts of things, which were really outside the elements of a risk contingency. As far as some of the other things that you mentioned, we did use a risk contingency because one of the big elements that we came upon was the escalation of construction prices, which were initially anticipated about 3.5% per year. What we ended up seeing was 11% per year. So when we noticed that component of increase, we realized that we were at risk with the budget, and that's when we came back to Metro and discussed with them how we wanted to proceed, and the decision was made to provide additional funding.
So is there something different now in Phase 2 as versus what took place in Phase 1?
Well, Phase 2, we still have our elements of risk that we'll manage against. You know, there, you need to manage that. You make certain assumptions, again, as far as escalation, as far as design development. We'll manage those. And then the decision, if we end up seeing that things are coming outside of the range, then we would go back to Metro and decide what we wanted to do from a scoping perspective or a value engineering perspective.
Mr. Chair, the policy, the board-approved policy, requires that we come back to the board at three steps, those being PE, final design, and prior to construction, and to report on the status of the project as regards budget, cost estimates, and available resources, money. The point of this is to identify a potential problem early as
right.
possible. phase. It's kind of predicated on an assumption, if you will, that we are all human beings, and human beings always want more and better. So it is understandable that project advocates would always seek enhancements, which might be betterments of one kind or another, a new station, a new kind of shelter at the station, whatever it might be. The problem with this that we're trying to avoid is, to give a silly example, let's say that we're building Expo 2 and it comes in a half mile short of connecting to the current terminal or the currently under construction terminal on the line, but we'd be forced to pay for the completion of the project anyway. So what we want to make sure we don't do is find ourselves in a position where we're behind the eight ball and forced to fund an enhancement because we didn't identify it and act promptly in an earlier enough phase. So we look forward to the self-discipline of coming back to the board with those cost estimates of the three phases to try to avoid the potential. Now, there's always going to be the potential for problems, but we think that by focusing tightly on cost at these phases, and by bringing it back to the board, we can at least minimize the chances of it.
Thank you. I have a couple other questions with respect to phase two of Expo. You're familiar with that's your baby, right?
Yes, sir.
Look at the report. It talks about four different areas of risk: requirements, design, market, and construction. As you have gone through the process for phase two, could you explain to me the level of risk on each of those categories? I see here that they've noted that risks are either high, medium, or low. And let's go through the requirement risks.
I don't have that in front of me now, sir, so I'd rather have the information with me. So I'd be happy to come back to the board and report on it when I have the information here.
Would you do that?
I would do that.
There are four areas of risk. I'm sure you'll know what they are because they're all in the report here. And I'm just concerned about whether we are anticipating the right level of risk for each of these categories. So if you could be prepared to come back to the full board.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Is there someone here from the other authority? Thank you.
Yes, we do.
Yes, sir. Chris Berner for the Foothill Extension Construction Authority.
On your project, have you already gone through the process of determining the contingency?
Yes, we have. We have two phases, a phase we call 2A, which goes from Pasadena, picks up at the current terminus in Pasadena and goes to Azusa. And then a second phase that we are planning from Azusa onto Claremont. So we have a budget for our phase 2A project. We've allocated, we have some allocated contingency and some unallocated contingency. And then we also have some, what essentially amounts to project reserve. There's approximately $75 million that we have set aside for our phase 2B project. A few months ago, we were following the cost control policy of a Metro. We identified a few increases in various different elements of the project, real estate being one. There were a few others. And we presented that to the Metro Board, and we took some money from that, what would amount to be taking money from our Phase 2B project, and allocated that to our Phase 2A project. That reduced it, the contingency, from whatever it was. I can't remember the exact amount, down the project reserve from whatever the amount was to $75 million.
Would you also be prepared to come back at the board and give us your level of risk assessment for those four categories of risk?
Yes, I'll be glad to do that next month.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, Mr. Weezer, you have any questions?
Yeah, following up on some of the general questions that our chair asked, in practice over the last 15 years, how have we done, given the guidelines and the contingency policy, have we gone over the contingency on how many projects, et cetera? How would you rate how we've done in the last 15 years?
I feel the management team has done a really good job on the North Hollywood project, on the subway. We came in under budget on that project. We also came in under time on the original Orange Line project in 2002 when we issued a notice to proceed and got that project started. We were under budget considerably. As far as the Orange Line extension project right now, That's part of the reporting. We're anticipating we'll be underrunning that project on the east side light rail project. That one also came under budget and ahead of schedule. So far, regarding the last 15 years, our projects have come under budget and are also on time or ahead of time.
So there have been very few projects that we've actually gone beyond the contingency in terms of the financial contingency?
I'm not aware of allocated any of budget. The ones associated with the capital program, the major capital projects, and any of those have gone over budget.
None of them have gone over the contingency?
I'm not aware of. I'd be more than happy to get back to you next month if I am incorrect in that information.
Okay. And lastly, when we allocate, let's say, for a new line, a new station, a new an enhancement to that project, that's not a that doesn't come out of the contingency, right? Because that's added budget because the contingency is for unexpected events that occurred during the construction.
Right. For contingency, we had the two categories. One is the unallocated contingency, which is spread over the various cost elements like construction, right-of-way, professional services, and that money is allocated for any potential changes. We have the other category for contingency, which is the unallocated contingency, which is part of the bottom line number of the total project cost. That one handles some of the additional scope, but for something like an added station or something like that, what we have to do is, which is what we're doing on the Crenshaw project, we're doing a risk assessment of how that additional component, well, how that impacts the overall total project cost, as well as we're doing a value engineering, like for next month, for example, on the Crenshaw project. And then we'll be doing an industry review to try and see how we can bring down the cost for any additional scope or just overall valuation of the total project scope. So,
some of the actions that we took place regarding the Crenshaw line at the last board meeting and preparation for the new studies that are being completed, none of that money is coming out of contingency, correct?
Not at this time.
Not at this time.
It's a, okay, got it.
Thank you. Madam Secretary, was this an item for action or receive and file? Okay. If we can go back to the item number one, and we'll have whomever is to give the report on item number one.
Okay. Can you put the slide up? Okay, the first project update is on the Metro Orange Line extension. Other than the issues that we have to deal with the DWP, getting some of the relocations done, and with the Bureau of Engineering and Streetlights, the project is on schedule, and we have made a lot of progress in the last few months. On the congestion reduction demonstration project, we have the design, build, operate contractor. He has completed the 50% design of the project, and we are working very closely with Caltrans because they do have two other projects simultaneously going on at the same time. So we are doing the coordination with them to make sure that all projects proceed according to the schedules. We do have a groundbreaking ceremony for the express heart lanes on July 6th at the RTCR Transit Center. Next one is the Crenshaw LAX Transit Corridor Project. We continue to aggressively do the cost reductions as directed by the board and as explained by Bill Brown just now. And we are still waiting for final resolution from the Federal Aviation Authority regarding the trench closure at the Aviation Boulevard. We hope to have that decision sometime this month. We are also looking at the contracting strategy about the size of the contracts we should put out for construction, how many contracts should we have. So we are in the process of working those details. Some of the issues that we have on Crenshaw LAX is the submittals that we are getting. The contractor consultant, they're on time making their submittals. So we have to get those reviews done on time not only by the agency but also by third parties like the city and its various bureaus and DWP. So that one is some work that we have to do. On the Leonard Park Station, as directed the board, we are looking at the bid options and also the environmental and engineering that we need to do to get that going. On the BNSF track abandonment, we are in various meetings with the BNSF. Our legal department is negotiating the conditions with them. A regional connector transit project, we just finished a value engineering on that June 7th through June 10th. We are working very closely with the city of LA to find relocation of early utility relocation that we could do as soon as the FTA provides the record of decision. We have met with the Broad Museum and Disney Hall since the Second and Hope Station is a major icon station for those two activities there, so we are working closely with them. On the West Side Subway, there are a lot of right-of-way issues as well as some additional geotechnical work that we have to do. We have engaged additional drill rigs and crews to get information in a timely fashion. The consultant has been on schedule and delivered the preliminary engineering documents in phases, which we are reviewing at the moment. We still do not have a decision on the Century City Station location that we are working on. And we are also, we just completed a value engineering on the west side. So we are trying to see how many of the value engineering items that they recommended can be adopted and have a cost effect on the project. The administrative draft, the administrative draft of the final EIS EAR will be submitted by the end of June, as we said we would. We are also having a series of meetings with the FTA to develop a schedule that they can work with us on that. I-405, here the major issues are still the right-of-way with the VA, also with the Salvation Army, and also with the GSA. So we are working on those issues, but the work is proceeding according to the schedule. The major one, of course, as you know, is the 405 closure. We have Linda and Mark Littman here. Linda, would you want to give an update on what we are doing?
Good morning. You have in your packets of information a summary of the outreach that is taking place in relation to the closure, and it is significant. We have joined forces both locally, statewide, and nationally, and even internationally to get the word out. As you can see from the numbers here, you can see that we are achieving a kind of saturation in getting the messaging out. We have covered all of the local entities. We are contacting all of the leadership of the major institutions that may be affected. But beyond that, this has an impact that has a ripple effect that is sequentially gaining momentum. And for those of you who traveled throughout the state on the weekend, you would see that Caltrans has placed the warnings already, or should I say information, from the Oregon-California border to the border at San Diego. So throughout the state, we have this information. And through all of the messaging for those who use GPS systems, we have three at least who have picked those up with Google, TomTom, and others. So this, with our advertising, our media campaign, personal outreach to cities that are most affected here on the west side, and a letter that went out to personally to each of the mayors under CEO Art Leahy and District Director 7 Mike Miles' signature. We are encouraging those mayors to get the word out to say, enjoy your neighborhoods this weekend, and if you must travel, all of the information is going to be widely available. We're using the 511 system as well. KNX will be posted at the site that weekend, and they will be putting out messages. So it's a comprehensive program, and we continue to update it, and we continue to monitor it to ensure that we are reaching the people who need that information and that messaging is getting out. And I think through the summary that you have in front of you, you'll see just how broad that outreach has been. Certainly.
Can you speak to the issue of how this agency is getting the message out via our social networking media outlets?
Well, we've had an active social media networking going on from the beginning with this project because we knew that the most successful way to communicate on a regional impact project was through our social media networking. And so that comes right out of the integrated project site. We have someone who is specifically there conducting that communication. And in addition, I think Mark Littman has information on that front.
Yeah, there's been a widespread use of social media. There's dozens of, literally dozens of agencies involved in this, World Airports, LA Inc., the business community, all the law enforcement agencies, Metro, Caltrans, Metrolink, and others. So they're using their social media avenues to get the word out. We got Facebook, we got Twitter. There's going to be my brother-in-law, who runs the music center, has been contacted at least four different ways via social media, getting the message out. So it's getting out there, you know, via social media and mainstream media as well. That press conference we had on June 6th, incidentally, got picked up by more than 300 media outlets around the world.
And the information that's getting out there, is it showing a clear alternative or set of alternatives for those who would normally travel that that alignment, that right away?
Right, but mainly the message is plan ahead, avoid the area, or stay home. We really want people, if possible, not to drive at all. We're also going to be putting out the message that Metro, Metrolink, and other carriers have options for you as well.
I kind of doubt that people will not drive at all in L.A. Yeah. So I think we need to give them some options from where they can drive. If, for example, they want to get to the airport, or if they want to go to the South Bay, or they want to go to South L.A. Or I think it needs to be more than, you know, stay off the roads. People are going to be on the roads. We just don't want them to go that way. We want them to go other ways. So is there a plan that clearly states if you want to get to this place, take this route? Or is there a place that they can go online and actually navigate themselves through an alternative route instead of going their normal path?
Absolutely. The maps are already posted online, but beyond that, we have a closely integrated program going on with LAWA, and all of the important access issues that affect those trying to either do business there through the trucking organizations, passengers, the flyaway. We're providing red line service to get to Union Station. And so it's a highly integrated, interconnected effort that's going on. AAA is also involved in getting the message out. All of the major venues have that information, and it should be popping up on their websites. We have a link that is readily applicable and is being loaded up by the webmasters of all of these different broad-reaching network of communication. So we are going to be bird-dogging that over the next couple of weeks to ensure that we're getting to the right people, that the messages are getting out, and you know, we're trying to leave no opportunity unfulfilled, and we continue to take in recommendations, and so we welcome those.
Have you contacted, for example, the MapQuest group and the Google Navigation and others where people...
Correct. Already on board.
Very
thank
well.
You.
Okay. Thank you.
You are saying, though, that we are reminding folks about the 84 Olympics. where, in fact, there were a lot of radical things done that made it be okay, on top of our free rail service and free bus or better bus service and things like that.
As well as a reminder that there's been other major freeway closures after the Northridge earthquake, the 10 freeway between like Venice and Fairfax, there's two bridges were knocked out for 92 days, the I-5, the Castaic Tunnel fire, the 210, the Bay Bridge. There's been another examples of full freeway closures that have been successfully managed. It doesn't have to be Carmageddon.
Has it been the same number of trips as we have on the 405, though, comparatively speaking?
405 is pretty big.
Yeah, 405 is like 500,000 vehicles for those 2 days.
So, yeah.
Five is one of the busiest freeways, but we did have the MacArthur Maze fire, which is a very high traffic route leading into the San Francisco, and that was closed during the fire and destruction of the overpass there. So we do have some experience handling mass amounts of traffic for periods of time.
And the 405 and the 101 connection, I would imagine, is just it impacts it even more.
It's a very big impact, and it really is a stay away, don't drive weekend, because even the detour that we're publicizing to go to LAX is down the 605 or the 710, so it's not an easy detour. So really, if you don't have to travel, it's really advisable that you don't.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Murthy, if you can speak to the issue of what happens if we have weather issues during this 53 hours with respect to the construction or demolition.
On the demolition?
Yeah.
The issues? Okay. I think I was trying to explain to you before. We have done the demolition of the two bridges before on the 405. Both of them, we were able to get it done on schedule or a little bit ahead of schedule. Fortunately, there, in those cases, we had two spans of the bridge. We could independently deal with those spans and then close only one direction of the freeway. Whereas in this case, we have a single-span bridge, so the entire span has to be brought down as one piece. So that's why the full closure is required for this freeway. We have planned everything that we need to do along with Caltrans to make sure that the freeway is open by 5 o'clock, as we said we would Monday, in a safe manner so the public can use the freeway.
So if by some freak weather change and we have rain during that time, is there a contingency plan?
We have contingency plan. We have Caltrans crew stand by in addition to the contractor crew, just in case if we need some help, so they can jump in and help us out to make sure the freeway is open.
Thank you. Mr. Miles, do you want to give?
I would just say that unless it's a major tropical, 7 inches of rain, we plan on proceeding with this event even if it's a light rain. It's not going to be delayed unless it's something really drastic that happens.
Okay, thank you. All right, unless there's other questions, can we move to item two? Did you want to give your report, Ms. Moss? Thank you.
I have a PowerPoint, so I'll just, she's going to pull it up for me. I'm going to talk a little bit about the I-5 work that we have going on on the North I-5. Give you a status report of what we're doing up there. Nope. The other, make it big. There you go. And then down in the corner, there you go. Okay, next slide. Okay, this is just a brief overview of the I-5 corridor, and it identifies the locations where we have construction either going or we have projects in design to complete in those areas. As you can see, the number of projects that we have is pretty extensive. Most of the I-5 work is under construction. We have a few items that are still in design, and it'll be quite a while before everything is done. It's going to continue. Next slide. This is a schedule of the work that we have going. As you can see, again, most of it is already in construction. A lot of it is going to be completed, and it has the dates on there of when those projects are scheduled to be completed. This is a diagram showing the areas where we've received funding for the I-5 projects north, And as you can see, a large portion of it is the Prop C money. Our first project I want to discuss in detail is State Route 134. It's a 2.7-mile project. It's 100% complete of design and right-of-way. We don't anticipate any type of problems right now. The only things that we're concerned about are any type of construction-related changes that we may run into. We anticipate the 13. Next segment. Magnolia Boulevard to Buena Vista Street again. It'll begin construction in June of 2012. We anticipate it being done in 2015. So it's 80% complete on the design and 20% complete on right-of-way. And there's 17 parcels that we still have to buy. Next slide. Magnolia to Buena Vista Street and the Empire and Burbank. This is just a little bit continued of what we were just talking about. There's an issue of some hazardous waste, and also one of our risks is the loss of the CIMA funding, which would have some impacts upon this project with the construction. And if we lose the money, it's really a loss of a segment that's a vital link between the other HOV and land projects that we're doing. Next one is Buena Vista Street again. Began construction in October of last year. It's due to be completed in December 2013. The only risks that we're seeing now are any type of construction changes that we would have. Next slide. State Route 170 to State Route 118. It was began construction of May of 2012. We anticipate it being done in 2013. No major problems other than the construction things that we would normally run into on a project. 118 to 14, it's a $12 million job. It started construction in June of 2011, and we see no significant risks on this project. Next one is State Route I-5 to the 14. It's a direct HOV connector. There's some oil-contaminated soil out there that's was an issue for us that we had to remove. And so this project is due to be completed in 2013. Next one is Pico Canyon Road, and these are the truck lanes. It's slated to go to construction in December of 2011. We're still working on the funding agreements with Metro. And so as soon as that funding agreement is completed, then we would expect to go to bid and begin construction in December. Next segment is State Route 14 to Parker Road. It's the HOV truck lanes. Again, it's start construction of 2014. There are some funding issues with this project that we're trying to work out, and if we're able to do that, it would complete construction in 2017. That's a questions. I'll be glad to answer them.
Thank you. Let's see. That'll be you, Art?
Sure. Had a press event today called Dump the Pump. This has been an annual event for some years now, basically asking folks to think about the consumption of imported foreign fuel. Got a very good media turnout, a lot of television action. I actually operated a bus as part of the event, so we think it went well. I'm told that the governor has vetoed the budget that was passed yesterday, so stay tuned for that. On Friday, there's a meeting with myself and my counterparts from San Diego, Orange, Ventura, Santa Barbara, and San Luis Obispo regarding the so-called LOSAN corridor, I-5 LOSAN corridor. The notion being to discuss a potential local JPA to direct the service in the Southern California region. With that, I'll conclude my report. Thank you.
Madam Secretary, are there items that need to be heard this morning? Okay. Are there a member of the public that would like to? Anyone from the public?
No, just one person signed up for item.
Okay. Very well. Then I think we'll call this meeting adjourned. Thank you.